to me. Goodbye, all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland's 90.7 FM. The time is 8:58 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire. Hello, KBOO.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fogering. The show is Fight the Empire. And I'm glad that one of the callers on Paul Rowland's show raised the issue of who killed Dr. Martin Luther King. Because every, you know, this time of the year at Dr. King's birthday, we get a lot of well-deserved tributes to Dr. King. But there's not a whole lot of talk on the news, at least on the mainstream news, and that includes NPR, about who killed him. And a lot of information is available. And there are two books by William Pepper, who was an attorney and also a friend of Dr. King. And those books are Orders to Kill and An Act of State. And The Act of State is a more recent book, and it's really well worth reading. It has a lot of information in it, and so I'm glad that this is an issue that that needs to be talked about and investigated more. Another person who was assassinated at this time of the year was Patrice Lumumba, the premier of Congo, and that happened back in January 17th in 1961. And there we do know the answer who killed him. These are forces of Congo's breakaway province of Katanga. What happened when Congo became independent, the Belgian mining interests, they had a big, I believe it was a copper mine in the province of Katanga, and they tried to secede from the Congo and set up their own little state, ruled by, they had their own hand-picked Congolese politician, a man named Moise Tshombe, and that led to a civil war in the Congo. That should be sort of an interesting bit of history that should not be forgotten. It's sort of a continuing story of murder and theft on a huge scale. So those are two assassinations that are really should be should stay in the limelight, should be investigated more and talked about. If anybody wants to call in with comments, the number is 503-231-8187. Lately, there's been a lot of talk on the news about Russia and Ukraine. And what it focuses on is the Russia massing troops along its side of the border, and talk of a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine. Now, this talk has been mostly, I think, just about all of it has been on the coming from the U.S. and its allies in Ukraine. I think believe that Russia has denied that it has any plans to invade Ukraine, and it seems to me that it would be a really a dumb thing to do. It's been talked about now for seems to me at least a week, probably more, and it hasn't happened. Hopefully it will not happen. Like I said, it would be a very stupid thing for Putin to do. And whatever you think about Mr. Putin, I don't think he is stupid. But what's in all the talk about Ukraine, there is no mention, I've heard no mention at all about Viktor Yanukovych. He was at one time he was the president of Ukraine. He was an elected president. Keep that in mind. Don't forget, he was elected, and he was president, I believe, the year was back in 2014 or 2015, around perhaps a little bit later, and he was driven from office by these street protests in Kiev, so-called Maidan revolution or protests, which included some Ukrainian fascists among the protesters and the rioters. And Yanukovych was forced out of office, and he his crime was I believe what happened was that Ukraine was presented with two kind of aid packages from abroad. One was from Russia, and the other was from I believe the European Union and the U.S. And Ukraine, Yanukovych decided that the terms of the Russian offer was better for Ukraine. I believe it had no interest or whatever. Somebody might want to look that up. But Yanukovych decided that the Russian offer was superior, and so he went for that. And that's when the protest broke out in the streets of Kiev. And that's what happened when he was, that is why he was pushed out of office. And like I said, keep in mind that he was the elected president of Ukraine. So it kind of gives a lie to U.S. talk about the democracy. When an elected president is pushed out of office, so that is something to keep in mind about Ukraine. Ukraine, if you look at a map, you'll see that Ukraine has it's always been a kind of a divided country. The borders of Ukraine over the years have changed. They've expanded and contracted, and at present there is a kind of a division. There is Ukraine proper, which sort of centers around Kiev and to the west of that. And then there is eastern Ukraine, which is more or less part of Russia, or at one time it used to be. And the people there speak Russian, and they are sort of allies of the Russian nation. And they, because all through history, Ukraine and Russia were very close. And the people of eastern Ukraine, they were the ones who provided Yanukovych with his political support. You had a an election, and the people of eastern Ukraine they had enough votes to put Yanukovych in office, and then he was thrown out, and really basically had to flee for his life. And this prompted his supporters in eastern Ukraine to kind of withdraw from the political scene, to sort of secede. I don't know if it was an outright secession or not, but they sort of felt that the handwriting was on the wall, and that their interests are being disregarded, and that perhaps they were in danger of political violence or overthrow, just as their leader Yanukovych was. And so basically that is the reason why there is this kind of civil war going on in Ukraine right now. It proceeds from the overthrow of the elected leader, and now the Ukrainian government is continuing this war against the elected leader's supporters. And it's that's not the way it's being presented in the news shows on that you hear in this country. It's and when I say news show, the news I listen to most on the radio is besides KBOO, I listen to NPR, and they have a reputation for being kind of a little more honest than the kind of, or more serious than the news you hear on the commercial stations. But they have their drawbacks too. They don't report everything, and this is one thing that has not been reported very little. And so right now on NPR you hear a lot of talk. It's been going on for I think at least a week, 2 weeks or whatever, about Russia being poised to invade Ukraine. And when you try and figure out where that talk comes from, all I've heard so far is that it comes from intelligence sources, and they are is sort of passed on to the public by news stations like NPR, and I think we might want to question that. Because these news stories, they focus on the effects, but they don't they make hardly, and I've heard no mention at all on NPR about the ouster of Viktor Yanukovych. If any listeners out there have heard about this, I wish they would give the number to call is 503-231-8187. Give us your take on this. This is something that is worth talking about and should be on people's minds instead of the kind of I don't know what you call a pablumized news you hear on the commercial stations that sort of go into the some of the features of the situation in Ukraine, but they don't. They say very little about the about the reasons for it. So I don't know if I mentioned this at the beginning of this show, but there's a very interesting article about on Paul's show. One of the callers mentioned he talked about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And in the latest issue of Covert Action magazine, there's a article by historian Jeremy Kuzmarov, and it's titled, "Did J. Edgar Hoover Order the Assassination of Martin Luther King Jr.?" And I can read a little bit from this. Everyone knows that James Earl Ray shot Martin Luther King Jr., right? The U.S. government says so. All the school textbooks say so. And it is enshrined as unquestioned gospel in the pages of Wikipedia. But the official story is full of holes. Instead, mounting evidence suggests that King may have been murdered as part of a conspiracy planned and or abetted by the FBI in coordination with local Memphis police personnel. And recall that he was shot in Memphis at the Lorraine Motel. In this scenario, Ray served as a patsy. Let me get on the page here. Like the critics allege, Lee Harvey Oswald was in the JFK assassination. The real shooter, according to this account, struck King not from the boarding house bathroom, allegedly from where Ray shot him, but from bushes behind the bathroom, behind the boarding house. And King's assassination version of the famous grassy knoll. This article lays out that evidence, as it may soon be laid out in court and in congressional committee, in the King family's demands to reopen a murder investigation continue to gain traction. What follows, and then the article goes on, is a reconstruction of the events leading up to the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the subsequent purported attempts by local and national officials to cover up their involvement and pin it on a patsy named James Earl Ray. So that article is in Covert Action magazine by historian Jeremy Kuzmarov, and it's it lays out all the evidence that that Dr. King was killed not by James Earl Ray supposedly firing from the bathroom of his boarding house on the next block over, but from somebody in the bushes behind that boarding house. And it's something that this is a story that we have to keep alive, because some circles in this country would love to see it forgotten. They would like us to focus on on only one side of the King assassination, and ignore the more grim realities of what happened. And like I said before, another assassination, of course, was Patrice Lumumba, who was the head of the newly independent Congo, and he was killed by forces of the Katanga province. And Congo right now is ruled by I'm not sure who the latest president of Congo is, but I would hazard a guess that he is acceptable, perfectly acceptable to the Western mining interests and others who continue to control control Congo from their vantage point. Right now, Congo is sort of getting the overflow from a civil war going on in neighboring Burundi and Rwanda, and this too has its imperialistic side, where the leader of Rwanda is got military training in the United States, and he is fighting a civil war against dissidents in that country, and the fighting has driven them out of Rwanda and neighboring Burundi, and they are sort of in eastern Congo still keeping up their fight. So it's another divided nation. If people want to call in with questions or comments, I think we need to keep in mind what is going on in Ukraine, and not focus on what the commercial news shows feed us, but what is going on behind the scenes. This is it's a nation that's divided, and one whole side of it is being ignored, the side of the elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, who was forced out of office. We had a lot of news when it was going on of the violence in the streets of Kiev. One of the things that happened in Kiev was the supporters of Yanukovych, they had taken refuge in a building overlooking the square, and the building was set on fire and it burned to the ground. I don't know how many people died in that fire, but that is not talked about very much either. So this is
Curtis is on the line.
Pardon me?
Curtis is on the line.
And we have somebody on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say, what about abolishing NATO? And one thing about Martin Luther King is his main message was, we need to stop spending money on war and use that money to feed the poor. And that's what the Poor People's Campaign
was about. That's true, yes.
But yeah, what do you think about abolishing NATO? It's a Cold War relic. That do we really even need NATO anymore?
Well, I think that's a very good question. I remember when it's been quite a while now, when the Soviet Union collapsed, there was a lot of talk for a while about now that there was no Soviet Empire anymore, that maybe NATO had served its purpose and ought to be sort of dissolved, but that did not happen. When you think about NATO, there are a lot of military bases that are part of it. There are a lot of jobs, well-paying jobs in NATO, both civilian and military. And all of a sudden, they saw their meal ticket sort of having served its purpose and being phased out. And so there was a lot of talk about quickly finding a new purpose for NATO, and I think that's what they are trying to do right now.
Well, and so that's not an extreme position to take, really. That's not an unreasonable or an undoable thing.
No, I don't think so, no.
If people have talked about it before.
Oh, yes. It was in the news about, when did the Soviet Union collapse, Ron? 1991 or so. That was about, 30 years ago. And so it was in the news then, and so a lot of talk about it. But then supposedly NATO is retooled to whatever its purpose is now, and so that talk died away.
Maybe this recurrent will create a critical mass that will that people will realize that, that NATO needs to be ended.
Well, it could be. Yes, I'm not sure what NATO is doing now. It's trying to apparently NATO has become its original purpose was a kind of a European sort of bulwark against Russian Soviet expansion into Europe, but it's NATO now has got its hands everywhere. I believe NATO has got troops fighting in Afghanistan, which is in the kind of Central Asia, and so NATO has become, it's not just a European thing, it's become kind of a worldwide kind of a gravy train for militarists and warmongers, basically what
well,
it is.
And they're the aggressor. It's an aggressor type position, aggressive position.
Against who?
Against anyone who's against imperialism and colonialism, really.
Well, I guess so. I mean, that's NATO includes. Basically, NATO is run by the United States, although it has its European component, NATO has taken over a lot of sort of struggles that the European Union ought to be dealing with, like Ukraine. Ukraine is kind of a European country, and it has its conflicts with Russia. Well, these should be, I think, dealt with by the European Union and not by NATO, because NATO is basically an instrument of United States policy, and the U.S. could be interested in what's going on around the world, but the U.S. does not have the right to, or should not have the right to call the shots. So. This is the struggle in Ukraine. It would seem to me that this should be something dealt with by the European Union, because they are right there on the scene. And the European Union, whatever you may say about them, they are not a military organization like NATO is.
Yeah, I'd like to see some humanitarian, win hearts and minds with humanitarian aid instead of installing extractive and supporting extractive industries. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Great show. I listen to you all the time. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for calling. If there anybody else wants to call in with a question or a comment, the number to call is 503-231-8187. We have about, I believe, about 4 minutes left this show. Time to get in one more little phone call if anybody wants to. Well, we talked about who killed Patrice Lumumba in the Congo. I'd like to this kind of popped in my mind the other day. A good book for people to read is called The Good Soldier Schweik, and it's written by a Czechoslovakian writer named Jaroslav Hasek, and it was written back around 1920, 100 years ago, and it was about this fellow Schweik, who was drafted into the army of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in World War One, and basically it's a very funny novel, and it's about Schweik is he's eager to please, and he wants to do his duty, and he's the kind of guy who screws things up by following orders. That's sort of, you might say, the general theme of this book, The Good Soldier Schweik by Jaroslav Hasek. It's a very funny book, and so if you see it, pick it up and give it a read. He gets drafted into the army of the Austro-Hungarian Empire and he's on the front, and then he's sort of behind the lines, and he has a whole series of adventures kind of bumbling into one situation after another, just trying to do his duty and somehow screwing things up.
We have Robbie in here.
We have somebody online. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I loved the show, the conversation that you've had so far. It's been very great. I actually wanted to bring up you bringing up the Ukraine conflict. It looks like we are very close to war with Russia, unfortunately. You know, and I hope that's not the case. But I wanted to bring up the Iran. It's called the Friendship Pipeline, and the Friendship Pipeline is basically why the Syrian civil war broke out. You can look up on Wikipedia that this pipeline was started by Swiss contractors, and basically the Syrian civil war shut it down because they were either going to be driving it into the Caucasus, the pipeline, or they were going to be taking it into the southern European area. And basically the Syrian civil war has stopped this Iran friendship pipeline.
Oh,
and
that's very interesting. I've heard a little bit about that. We're really at the end of a show right now, but I want to thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
I hope that listeners, if you're inclined, go online, look up the Friendship Pipeline and see what that is all about. Because we have so much information kind of at our disposal that we could access these days. It's really we should take advantage of the internet. Go online and read articles that ordinarily might never see the light of day. So I want to thank the listener for bringing that to light, the Friendship Pipeline. So this has been Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fagre, and stay tuned to KBOO. It's your radio station. We own it, and we operate it, and it's it'll stay